This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with Julian Ng, Sharad Kutan, and me, Melissa Idris, this Friday, the 3rd of June. It's 7:35 right now, turning 7:36. Taking a look at some of the biggest business news of the day, OPEC in the headlines for failing to agree on a clear oil output strategy at its meeting in Vienna last night. Now, Saudi Arabia had promised not to flood the market and sought to mend fences within OPEC. But Iran, the wild card that it is, insisted on steeply raising its own production.
That's right. Iran is coming back into the game after a long time, and they, of course, want to sell their own oil. But also, this is the first OPEC meeting by that new oil minister, Khaled Al-Falih. He wanted to make his mark by setting a more conciliatory tone, but he didn't achieve the hope for supply cuts because of Iran.
But, you know, I don't know. Okay, so I don't think there was ever any chance that OPEC would have cut production in this meeting. So really, there are no real surprises that they failed to reach an agreement. But I have to say, I mean, it's important to point out that the price of oil has rebounded quite sharply since the $30 per barrel in January. And, you know, it's found kind of this stubborn level of about $47 per barrel now. So if, you know, for markets to really kind of panic again, it would have to be a clean break above, say, the $44 or $40 per barrel.
This issue of, you know, striking conciliatory tone, finding some sort of consensus among oil producers, is really overshadowed in many ways by this hostility between regional powers, right? So you have Prince Salman, you know, prosecuting this proxy war in Yemen. I mean, people are dying. It's a horrendous war that's not been given enough airplay, I think. But if he prosecutes that war in such a way, how is he, as the kingdom itself, going to achieve a kind of consensus on questions like oil? Because oil then becomes politicized, right? Becomes a tool in diplomacy, something that's not happened, apparently, according to analysts. For decades now, you know, the oil ministers, whatever, are not necessarily princes. They're not part of the royal family. And they've managed to steer oil policy away from, or keep it, you know, away separate. From, so separate from politics.
Yeah, that's right. Especially if you throw Iran into the mix. I mean, there are political rivalries there, and the oil price becomes whether this can fund their political intentions as well.
Yeah, so, you know, Prince Salman is also well known for, I mean, whatever his antipathies towards Iran, it's also rebounded back home. You know, there was the killing of that Shiite cleric, in his execution, you know, that caused a lot of distress in Iran. So he, you know, on one hand, he's got all these brilliant ideas, apparently, but the other hand, he's actually created more tensions back home by, you know, persecuting and repressing the Shiite minority.
But there is the other agenda as well, which is to put the shale producers in the United States out of business. And the new oil minister actually said as much, because he says that $50 oil would not spur the shale players to come back into the market. But he didn't give a target of what price would spur the shale producers, right? He just pulled a number out of the air and said maybe 100, 110, which we all know is a price that we probably won't hit for a long time. But it is very telling in what he says, because it reveals that there is a kind of no shale agenda, right? Mm. They have been denying it for a long time, but the fact that he's addressing this shows that there is some kind of an agenda going on there.
And also, speaking about the oil industry, let's take a quick look at Petrobras in Brazil, where the new CEO says that he wants to slash debt. So Petrobras has about $12 billion worth of debt due in 2016. In total, they have $130 billion in debt obligations. And that is going to be the priority for the new CEO.
There are a few factors that work against Petrobras. One is that they don't have the independence to set fuel prices. So with this new CEO, he has asked for that condition, that for him to be CEO, the government must not meddle in where fuel prices are going to be. The other one is this must invest rule, very much like what we have with Petronas. Petronas has a lot of risk-sharing contracts or production-sharing contracts. contracts for oil within our shores. Petrobras has that too, but that is also putting them in a very high debt level because the need to invest really balloons their debt up quite a lot. So he wants to change this rule for Petrobras to have some kind of leeway in assessing whether they want to go into those businesses or not.
7:40 right now, Starbucks have announced an agreement for AB InBev to produce, bottle and distribute a ready-to-drink line of Starbucks' Teavana brand tea in the US. Now, the move will help Starbucks broaden its reach beyond coffee, and this is something that they've been trying to do in recent years, trying to find new avenues of growth.
You know, Starbucks is a great distribution channel. If you go to the United States, you just have to walk every few steps.
Sometimes it's a Starbucks across the Starbucks.
Across the street, right? Like, if you went into the Starbucks over there and you asked to use the washroom and they say, oh, that's full, why don't you just go across the street, right? That kind of thing can happen with Starbucks. And remember those days when Starbucks used to sell CDs?
Oh my God, yes.
It was a big boost to whichever artists they promoted. So now they want to go into something else apart from coffee, and tea is something. And that, unholy alliance between a beer producer, right? They're using the beer's producers, Anheuser InBev's capacity to make tea.
I guess, for those of us on the outside and not that interested in whether Starbucks expands or contracts, is this just another example of how, growth, this kind of growth mentality is like this, it's like Alice in Wonderland. You're constantly running on the spot, right? You need to build and develop, even though it might be good enough. I mean, why not just stop at, 20 retail shops or whatever it is, or 20,000, whatever it is? Why do you need to constantly find new growth?
Well, just to answer that very quickly, apparently the demand for coffee for Starbucks has declined, and I think it speaks to the changing consumer tastes, right? And that's what Starbucks is trying to put its finger on. What is it that consumers want now? And apparently ready-to-drink tea, it's one of the fastest growing beverage categories in the US. You've got consumption rising by 6% in last year alone.
So ready-to-drink means it's already pre-prepared, bottled. But, the best kinds of teas are brewed fresh. And I wonder why, if millennials are the ones who are drinking bottled tea, I mean, that can't be a very good sign.
Well, they go to the hipster cafes, right? But Starbucks, they still want something that is fast-moving. That's where the term FMCG comes from, right? Fast-moving consumer goods. And when you bottle it up, you can fulfill that requirement for speediness. Also, on the other hand, for InBev, they get another product to sell, because right now they're just selling beers through a lot of their pubs and bars, and they can add tea to the mix, I guess, for the teetotalers who go into the pubs and bars. This is something that they can buy, or perhaps put that into the Long Island iced tea or something.
It's an option, I have to say. But you know what, speaking about changing consumer tastes, right, I have to say, tea may be the fastest growing beverage choice in the US, but I don't know whether you've realized that coconut water has suddenly gotten so sexy and hip lately. I mean, they've got bottled and canned and, it's coconut water.
It's a superfood.
It's a superfood.
And coconut has become really trendy, I think, also because of its apparent benefits for Alzheimer's, sufferers of Alzheimer's, people with, dementia. Coconut is seen, especially in extra virgin pressed coconut oil, seems very good. You add it to your cereal, they encourage you to add it to beverages in the morning. A spoonful is really good.
I paid, because I had such a thirst for coconut water, I paid $3 for a very small can of coconut in Australia, and I pay that same price for 3 whole coconuts here. Yeah. So, talk about distribution power.
And I think, in the past, coconut was associated with high cholesterol. This was not good for you.
There you go.
We've kind of like dumped on coconut cream, a santan that we use in our food. But there are a lot of benefits. I mean, if you lead an otherwise healthy life, perhaps a good cholesterol to take in is coconut.
I'm all for santan and coffee, but just want to bring this up. The founder of Pepsi, former Pepsi CEO, has died today at 71. And we didn't didn't know this, but there was a partnership formed between Pepsi and Starbucks 20 years ago to market some coffee.
Wow.
So, you know, Starbucks has a 75% share of the ready-to-drink coffee market, whereas PepsiCo is the largest in the soda sector, about a 30% market share.
Okay, 7:45 now. We'll be back with more business news shortly. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.